It's time to sit back, relax, and listen to Conversations with Joan. Conversations with Joan will inspire, motivate, and empower you. Live your best life now. Listen, learn, think, and decide. And now, here's your host, Joan Herman.
Welcome to Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life's Conversations with Joan. I'm Joan Herman. Thanks for tuning in. Conversations with Joan focuses on topics that are important to your life, from health and wellness to professional development to personal well-being. Changemakers join me to share their insights, tips, and strategies so you can thrive and live your best life now. Thank you for taking time for yourself, and thank you for letting us be a part of your life. Now, let's start talking. Mental health challenges are real and they're common. It's been reported that 1 in 5 adults experience some form of mental illness in a given year, and nearly 1 in 5 children have some type of serious mental illness. Joining us today to discuss how we can support individuals struggling with mental health challenges and their loved ones is Kay Warren. Kay co-founded Saddleback Church with her husband Rick. After the death of her son Matthew, who lived with serious mental illness for most of his life, she founded Saddleback's Hope for Mental Health Initiative as a way to support individuals and family members of loved ones with mental illness and suicide ideation. In 2019, Kay started Breathe, a ministry to support parents of children with serious mental illness. Kay was a board member of the National Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention. She's the author of multiple books, including Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough. Welcome, Kay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my privilege. Thank you so much, Joan.
Kay, I'm happy that we're having this conversation because this is such an important topic. The statistics are alarming. 1 in 5 adults experiencing some form of mental illness in a given year. And this is the one that really got to me. Nearly 5 million children, 1 in 5, has some type of serious mental illness. What do you believe is happening in our society that's driving this problem?
You know, those statistics are staggering. It means millions and millions of people, around 45 million people in the United States, just in the United States, are living with mental health challenges. And those numbers have been increasing through the years. And I think that the last 4 years in particular have really increased the amount of mental health challenges that we're all living with. I mean, the world has always been a bit of a dumpster fire with chaos and war and poverty and pandemic diseases and violence. I mean, that is kind of what it means to live in this broken world of ours. But the last 4 years has seen an increase in almost every area of mental health challenges, from the rate of suicide has increased in the United States. The amount of teenagers that are experiencing mental health challenges, more teenagers are visiting emergency rooms. As you mentioned, you know, the number of kids who are affected, but the studies are showing that teenagers are showing up in emergency rooms with either panic or depression or suicidal thoughts or suicidal attempts. We, as a people, are just not doing quite as well. And I think that all that happened in the last 4 years, from the COVID pandemic to political unrest to racial injustice, I mean, you put it all together and mental health challenges have gone up. One other thing that's super important that is causing an increase, particularly among teenagers, is technology. And if you don't have to be a scientist to figure this out. Just a little bit of reading or research will show that the effects of technology and social media, particularly on adolescent girls, is staggering. There are people coming, you know, you can't put the genie back in the bottle, but there are some people who are really urging parents to be incredibly careful with how much technology and particularly social media they're allowing their children and adolescents to be exposed to, because it's nothing but damaging. Nothing.
Well, I always say I would hate to be a young girl today, because, you know, when I'm older, so when I was a teenager or in high school, you went to school and you dealt with whatever you dealt with during the day, but you were able to come home and unplug from it. But now whatever you're experiencing is hitting you 24/7. You just can't get away from it.
Absolutely. And it's beginning to affect. I heard recently that social media and technology itself, not even social media, and right now it's technology, is affecting the number of people who are actually going to college. When you've got a YouTube video that explains, you know, the history of the world in with graphics and at super fast speed, and you can get a whole course in, you know, 20, 30 minutes, why would you go to college and take that course over a semester? It's really showing up in, like, more youth are not getting their driver's license. You know, it's not that they're just delaying it. They're just not getting it. Why would you do that when you have access to Uber or you have other ways of getting around? So technology is changing our lives, and it is affecting our mental health as well. We have to be really careful about our bodies and our minds as a result.
So you know the kids aren't going to give this up. What will it take to get the parents to take control of this?
I'm a grandmother now, and I am very close to my five grandchildren, and I watch my children parenting their children, and as you said, I don't envy them. Honestly, it is very, very difficult and very challenging, and you have to be incredibly intentional as a parent. I think you have to decide you're not going to just follow the crowd. And, well, everybody else has this technology, everybody else has this, so our kids are going to have this as well. I think there has to be an intentionality without going back to Little House on the Prairie days. You know, that's not what I'm saying. But somehow there has to be a recognition of this is not a benign thing. Technology, social media, those are not benign entities. Those are things that can actually affect us in very dramatic ways. So then parents have to be intentional about building connections with their kids. I think that we have, I watch a lot of families surrender, if you will, just go ahead and wave that white flag of, you know, yeah, I can't put the genie back in the bottle. I can't get away from this technology. I can't get away from all the social media stuff. I can't get away from it. But so they end up just surrendering to it rather than saying, yes, that is the world we live in. So what can we do in our family to increase connection, face-to-face time when people aren't on their phones, when people aren't watching TV, when they aren't using some other form of entertainment? How can we do face-to-face interaction, whether that's at mealtimes or there's a certain time set apart every day just to look each other in the eye, check in, talk about the day, talk about what's going on? It's tough. It's really tough. I don't want to in any way minimize it or sugarcoat it, make it seem easy. But we do have to make some intentional choices that will directly impact our mental health as well as our physical health.
Kay, why is this work so important to you? Why has this become your mission?
Because I've seen the effects of mental health challenges at its worst. When we lost our son Matthew to suicide in 2013, it's undoubtedly the worst thing that's ever happened to me, to our families. It's been 11 years. This year will be 11 years in April. And in some ways, I have not recovered at all because I don't know that we ever get over the loss of a child. I think it's silly to even think about getting over loss, but we're getting through it. And so while in some ways I would say I have this terrible thing that happened in my life that nothing is ever going to change, I'm also able to say, but life is also wonderful. And I do laugh more than I cry. And I have more good days now than bad days. But I've seen the effects of mental illness at its worst, how it can consume someone's life and actually cause them to end their lives. And I want other families to have support we didn't have. I want other families to have information we didn't have. I want individuals to have hope in ways that our son Matthew didn't. And so I think everything that I'm doing right now has a bit of a search for redemption, if you will. How can there be something good and beautiful that comes out of the worst thing that has ever happened to us? And how can we turn his suffering and his death into something that maybe relieves suffering and prevents death for other people.
You know, we talked about those statistics, and they're not, I don't believe, really reflective of what's going on out there. There are so many people feeling depressed or battling suicidal thoughts that aren't reporting it. And, you know, I'm one of those people. Back in 2010, and I always thought I was this very strong person, and I am a very strong person, but in a period of 5 months, my mother died, my son left for college, my 23-year marriage ended, and my sister died. And I had already lost my father and brother, and so this would have been the first time I would have been responsible for myself. And I had given up my earning power to take care of my children in our marriage. And so I was so broken and in such a dark hole, I spent a great deal of time planning my suicide. I never thought I would have been that person, ever. But I didn't see a way forward. And I would go out during the day and live my life. I would do my show. I took care of my children. I had social interactions with my friends. But when I went home at night, I would literally lie in a fetal position on the floor, sobbing, trying to figure out a way to get out of all of this. But I wore a really good mask. No one in my life at that time knew what I was going through. Do you think there are a lot more people like me that are walking around today with that mask on?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll probably get the quote wrong. Was it Thoreau who said most people live lives of quiet desperation? And I think it's so true. I think we are, all of us, pretty good at masking. You know, in America, we've got that can-do, independent cowboy on the range, able to just make it. We're tough. We're strong. We're survivors. We're winners. We're the ones who win wars. You know, we don't lose wars. We win wars. We're the world's protector. We see ourselves as, I think, Americans as very tough and resilient individuals. I think other societies, other cultures around the world have a much better handle on the collective and the communal aspects of life that I think we were meant to live. We weren't meant to live alone. We weren't meant to try to figure it all out by ourselves. In my faith tradition, God talks about how we're all part of a body. We're all part of the same body, and we all then have a place in that body. You know, the toe matters, the elbow matters, you know, the head matters, the heart. Every bit of the body is needed for a body to be healthy. And a lot of other cultures and societies have that as their value, and they're much more communally focused. I think that's one of the things that immigrants bring to America that is a blessing, actually. It's a focus more on family and being together and how you don't make decisions just on your own, but you're part of a collective. And so I think that's how we're meant to live. We're always seeking connection, but I do really believe what you said. Well, first of all, I want to go back and just say, Joan, I'm so sorry for all those losses and all that pain that you experienced and the ways that it led you to wondering if you could even keep going. I mean, my heart really resonates with you on that. And if we were in the same room right now, I'd reach over and give you a big hug or at least pat your hand because that's a very intense experience that you just relayed. And I don't think you're alone in that. I do think many other people are experiencing that sense of, even though and I'm not the first to say this by any means, but even with all of the technology, all of the social media, all of the, quote, ways to be connected, we are not. We are more isolated internally than I think we've ever been. So, yeah, definitely you are not alone, or we're not alone in that carrying your pain and your burdens by yourself.
I read where you had said that your greatest ministry always comes out of your deepest pain. And that experience that I described, that's why I started doing this work. I always say God has a sense of humor. I was a middle-aged woman from a small town in New Jersey that had this idea that I ran with. And so here I am all these years later doing this, but it came from the seeds of that pain.
Yep.
And we all have that opportunity.
Well, we do. My husband says that even a broken tree can bear fruit. You know, even a broken, and I think that's somebody sent, after my husband said that publicly, somebody sent us a picture of an oak tree that had been hit by lightning, and there was one very, very large branch and that had split, you know, from the tree. It was still attached at the roots, but for all practical purposes, it was separate, you know, and had been just completely hit by this lightning bolt and was lying on its side, and yet it was, you know, sprouting new branches. And it was this powerful metaphor of what does happen out of our own brokenness. Even broken trees, you know, can still bear fruit, can still be productive. And your life is an example of that, and I hope ours is as mm-hmm. well.
Well, so if there are a lot more people like me that wore that mask and hid the way they were feeling, because I thought it was a sign of weakness back then. If we're feeling that we're weak or that there's something wrong with us and we're not letting people into what we're going through, how can friends and loved ones pay attention to maybe some signs that we're putting out?
Yeah, and there are some signs that people are not doing well. One of the things I said during the pandemic that gave me great freedom is I heard someone else say, I'm not doing well, but I'm doing okay. And I grabbed onto that because it felt so real and true to the way I was experiencing life, which is, yes, in many ways, I'm not doing well. I'm not. There's a lot of struggle. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of loss. I will always miss my son, as I said. So in one sense, I'm not doing well, but I'm okay. And I think what you're mentioning is getting to the place of where we're also able to say, hey, I'm not doing well, and I'm not okay. And it's in that admission of I'm not okay that I actually might need some help, that I actually might need some something to get me out of this place that I'm at, is something that we need to be aware of for everybody. You know, in suicide prevention training, they talk about, you know, asking questions, noticing that a coworker maybe who is typically very relational and is the one who's standing at the water cooler, wants to talk to everybody else, is not there. They're at their desk. They're not coming to they're not joining in the office. You know, laughter, or somebody's missing work, or somebody is not able to, they're not at class, they aren't showing up at the bowling league like they have. Just noticing what's going on in the lives of the people around us is such, I think, the starting place. And then once you start looking at somebody and you see that maybe they're, you know, they're eating too much, more than they did, or maybe they're eating too little, maybe they're drinking too much, you know, something's different there. They're the things that they loved, they're not participating in, or they don't care about anymore. All of those are signs that we're not doing well and probably need some help. Even if it's just a friend saying, are you okay? Are you doing okay? I've noticed that, you know, and then you fill in the gap. I've noticed that you just don't seem yourself lately. Is it, you know, can I help? Is there anything you want to talk about? And people may say, oh, I'm fine. You know, they may not feel the freedom or the comfort or the safety to be able to give you an answer. But just knowing that somebody is paying attention to you and notices that you are not yourself can go such a long way in helping us know we're not alone in our struggles. So I would say first is just notice, pay attention to other people, what's going on, how they're maybe changing, they're not themselves. Ask a question, ask them if they're doing okay, ask them if there's anything you can do. And then if that persists, it's okay to ask that question, you know, are you thinking of taking your life? Are you in a place in which you really might need more help than even I can give you? And then being with that person and offering to say that is such a powerful suicide prevention message that can be applied on a smaller scale to all of our interactions, looking out for each other mm-hmm. and noticing and telling somebody, I see you, I see you. I see what's going on. And I'm here for you. I think those are things that all of us can do that don't require not a lot of training. They don't require, you know, any particular skill. It's just about being a walking through this world with an air of compassion and caring about a fellow human being.
Do you think we're making strides with the way society views mental illness?
I do. I really do. I'm encouraged. I've been doing this advocacy work for 11 years now, and I have seen a change and a shift, particularly in the faith community, which is where I operate most often, because the faith community has not typically done well with mental illness through the, you know, centuries. There's been a lot of stigma, a lot of prejudice, a lot of judgment and shame heaped upon people who are living with mental health challenges. And I do see a positive shift to where many more people are willing to say, oh, you know what, that is not just you being weak, or you're not a sinful person because you have depression, or you have bipolar disorder. This doesn't mean you don't have enough faith. There are people willing to say, wow, that's, you know what, something's going on in your body or in your mind, and there's an, you know, mental illnesses, the brain is part of the body in the same way the kidney is, in that something can go wrong, and therefore no judgment, no shame, but only compassion and care. So I am pleased that I see a shift. It's slow, and it's not all of where it needs to be, but I do see some the ground shifting in a positive way in many places.
Kay, where can our listeners go to get more information about you and your work?
KayWarren.com is my website. That is a curated website right now that is, I have not created all the content, but I and my team have scoured many other organizations who have free downloads or links to pages so that you could go there and get basic information or links to both mental illness, grief, suicide, loss, all of those things that have come into my life and I've needed help with. There's links to support groups, places to get help, referrals. It was what I wished I'd had when I was a young mom trying to figure out my child's mental illness. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what resources to trust. I could open the internet and be bombarded with a billion, you know, pieces of information on one topic. And so I've just tried to condense it into smaller bite-sized pieces, links, trusted links, where people can, especially, you know, lay people. It's not meant for medical professionals or anything, but, you know, people in the faith community, what can they do? What can a church do? What can a synagogue do? What can a mosque do to help the people living in their area? Everybody has something they can do. And so kaywarren.com is where they can go.
And Kay, in about 30 seconds or less, what's the takeaway?
The takeaway is there's always hope. There is always hope. Hope, you know, springs eternal. And to anything that we can do to nurture hope within ourselves and in other people is good and powerful connection.
Kay, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this important topic.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you for joining us. I hope you found the show informative. At Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life, we believe that knowledge is power. Take what you've learned, apply it, and live your best life now. Remember that the information provided is the opinion of our guest and should never replace the advice of a professional who knows your personal situation. If you'd like more information, visit our website, CYACYL.com. That stands for Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life. While on our site, listen to past shows on demand, read the digital magazine, sign up for our mailing list, and be sure to follow the show on social media. Until next time, this is Joan Herman. Thanks for tuning in.